The United Nations Security Council is now expected to vote later today on a resolution to authorize the use of force in Libya. According to reports, the resolution would allow a broad range of air and naval actions, but not the use of ground troops. The Arab League supports the idea. Permanent members like Britain and France say they have the votes to move forward. In just a moment, we're going to be talking with a former ambassador to NATO, and that's Robert Hunter, but he's not just with us just yet. The draft UN Security Council resolution to be put to a vote about 6 o'clock Eastern time, at least that's the most recent schedule we've heard, according to Reuters, would authorize a no-fly zone over Libya and allow Arab states and others in cooperation with the United Nations to protect Libyan civilians, including the rebel-held city of Benghazi. If adopted, the resolution obtained by Reuters would allow, quote, all necessary measures to be taken, quote, to protect civilians and civilian-populated areas under threat of attack in Libya, including Benghazi, while excluding an occupation force. That's, again, according to the news agency Reuters. In the meantime, Colonel Gaddafi has been speaking to his people there in Libya tonight and issued a statement to the citizens of Benghazi saying that if they surrendered immediately, there would be a moratorium. They would be allowed to do so, but that his forces would be in Benghazi tonight. And if they did not surrender, there would be no mercy. In the meantime, his defense chief said any attack by foreign forces would prompt a number of attacks, not just in Libya, but throughout the Mediterranean. And here we have a longer story on Libya for you. This is from the Associated Press based in Tobruk. Muammar Gaddafi vowed to launch aerial and frontal assaults on the opposition's capital, Benghazi, and crush the rebellion as his forces advanced through the city and warplanes bombed its airport Thursday. In the face of Gaddafi's increasingly powerful offensive, the United Nations was to vote on a mandate Washington seeks to strike his forces on land, sea, and air. After weeks of hesitance over imposing a no-fly zone in Libya, the United States made a dramatic about-face and called for even more expanded action, including strikes on Gaddafi's ground forces besieging rebel-held cities. The UN Security Council scheduled a vote early Thursday evening on a resolution that should open the way for that, establishing a no-fly zone, but also authorizing member states to take all necessary measures to protect civilians from attack by Gaddafi's forces. The change reflected the past week's swift reversal of realities on the ground, where once confident rebels are now in danger of being crushed under an overpowering pro-Gaddafi force using rockets, artillery, tanks, and warplanes. The forces advanced along the Mediterranean coast, aiming to recapture the rebel-held eastern half of Libya, in particular its capital, Benghazi. Gaddafi troops encircled the city of Ajdabiya, the first in the path of their march, but also had some troops positioned beyond that city toward Benghazi, Libya's second-largest city. In an address Thursday evening, Colonel Gaddafi proclaimed that the hour of decision has come and that his regime would begin tonight to put an end to the rebellion. The matter has been decided. We are coming, he added, calling by telephone to state TV and addressing the people of Benghazi. He said there would be amnesty for those who throw their weapons away, but for those who resist, there will be no mercy nor compassion. Gaddafi said his forces would rescue, quote-unquote, the people of Benghazi from, quote-unquote, traitors, and warn them not to stand alongside the opposition. Quote, the people will see tomorrow if one of their traitors or heroes don't betray me, my beloved Benghazi. The closest known position of Gaddafi's ground forces from Benghazi was still about 80 miles to the south, making it unclear if they would be able to move on the city Thursday night, as Gaddafi boasted. But during the day, several regime warplanes bombed the city's airport. Several witnesses said rebels in Benghazi succeeded in shooting down at least two of the attacking aircraft. Mohammed Abdel Rahman, a 32-year-old merchant who lives nearby, said he saw one of the warplanes shot down after striking the airport, a civilian and military air facility about 12 miles from the center of town. He said strikes had caused light damage. With us here in the studio to try to bail me out is NPR senior foreign editor Lauren Jenkins. And Lauren, we appreciate your coming in at the last second here.
Glad to be here, Neil.
We were trying to establish a link with the former ambassador to NATO, Robert Hunter. But in the meantime, there is this this resolution that's going to be presented to the Security Council this evening with not just a no-fly zone, but authorizing other kinds of military activities.
That seems to be the case. It's really following the language of the Arab League approval of a no-fly resolution last week, which sort of cleared the way for the UN to take it up. It seems to be saying it's a no-fly resolution, but that it also authorizes defense of civilians on the ground, which really is giving the planes that are going to be doing the no-fly authorization to bomb on the ground Gaddafi forces, presumably.
And so as they go ahead with this, clearly there's a lot of diplomacy behind the scenes. There are five permanent members of the Security Council, Britain, France, the United States. They're all sponsoring this resolution. There are two others, Russia and China.
Russia and China. And the word is that the Russians have agreed to the language and that the Chinese will probably abstain, which will mean the resolution will go through.
And Lauren, thank you very much for being with us. I think we have Ambassador Hunter with us, so we can let you get back to working on pieces for tonight's All Things Considered.
All right.
And we appreciate your ducking in here at the last
minute.
Thanks
a lot, Neil.
Ambassador Hunter, are you with us?
I am indeed.
Okay. We appreciate your time today. And Ambassador Hunter, now a senior advisor to the RAND Corporation, and we apologize for the technical difficulties and appreciate you taking your time. Would the resolution be put to a vote before the Security Council if the sponsors were not confident that they had the votes to pass it?
Oh, I don't think so, particularly because of the importance of this particular resolution. The countries like the United States, Britain, and France have already gotten themselves in a position where people are beginning to wonder why they haven't taken vigorous action. And I don't think they would just put a vote to a vote if they thought the Russians would veto it, or the Chinese, though I don't expect the Chinese to veto it if the Russians go along with it.
And that raises the question of then, given the situation there in Libya, how quickly could U.S., French, British, or indeed Arab aircraft become involved in this situation?
Oh, I think in a matter of hours. One presumes that all the planning has been done, that the equipment necessary is all in place, and that everybody's briefed. They know what the targets are and would be able to get it done within hours.
And the other question that people are going to have is, would this be decisive if you have ground forces with tanks and artillery and rockets within range of Benghazi, the rebel capital? Is an aerial help to the rebels going to make a difference?
Well, if it's just a no-fly zone, it will make some difference because it'll mean that Gaddafi has to stop using his aircraft for attack. It might also have an impact on people who now support Gaddafi, at least some of them, who will see that their future doesn't belong with the dictator, but in doing something else. But if you talk about actually having a decisive military impact, I think it's probably a week too late.
You think it's a week too late. On the other hand, once you have intervened, you're the United States. Can you allow your allies to lose?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say it in terms of allies. Let's say that it's people who are trying to fight against one of the authentic despots in the world today and have been doing it all by themselves. I would hope that if this does go forward and the United States takes part in a no-fly zone, that we and others would be prepared to do what is necessary to stop Gaddafi. And that means arming the rebels. It could ultimately, because of the time that's been wasted, require airstrikes of our own against Gaddafi's forces.
Well, that as we look at the resolution, that appears to be authorized. Any action necessary to protect civilians, that gives you a pretty broad ambit, doesn't it?
Well, protect civilians, that's different from enabling them to prevail in an attack against in a war against Gaddafi. Certainly, that doesn't go to the point of actually defeating Gaddafi. And in fact, it can be interpreted rather restrictively in terms of what is actually being done. After that, it depends on who the UN asks to come forward to implement it, whether it's anybody who comes forward, such as NATO, if they can get agreement, or whether they are going to ask any particular coalition of the willing, United States, Britain, and France being the obvious ones, to do it. And if indeed these countries will interpret all means necessary under Chapter 7 of the UN Charter to mean all means necessary, which would, of course, involve offensive military force rather than just the defensive efforts in a no-fly zone.
And you were formerly ambassador to NATO. Given the time constraints and opposition by some members of NATO to this, perhaps NATO might not be the right organization here.
It would require a good deal of effort to get agreement at NATO to do more than what has already been considered, namely a no-fly zone, where you have the Germans, who really are quite reluctant for historical reasons to see military force used, and the Turks, who have themselves expressed reservations. But if you have a UN resolution, then I think most allies would crowd behind it, particularly if the United States, Britain, and France were prepared to take the lead with a list of military activities they are prepared to undertake. And again, one presumes all the planning for a wide range of military activities is already done, and it's a matter of the willpower on the part of particularly those three countries actually to do it.
We're talking with Robert E. Hunter, former U.S. ambassador to NATO under President Clinton. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Harry on the line. Harry with us from El Cerrito in California.
Hi, thank you. My question is this. What is the strategic aim that's behind the turnaround of the U.S.? Does the U.S. Intend, do you think, to depose Gaddafi and perhaps bring Libya into the sphere of influence of the West, the United States? Or do they intend to break off the Cyrenaic part of Libya to do the same? If they put a base in Libya, wouldn't they be able to sort of control the whole Western Mediterranean? Why is it that that they have not done some more covert supplying of arms and so on?
Cyrenaica, the eastern portion of what's now Libya. Robert Hunter?
Well, I don't think there's any question about wanting to bring Libya, quote, into the sphere of influence. It already really is in that part of the Mediterranean. Gaddafi himself had already moved from being an active enemy with a nuclear program to giving that up and wanting to be received back again by the West. What's really involved here is whether he should be allowed to pound his own people while the United States, Britain, France, and others, and all of, let's say, the European countries and some Arab countries are in a position to stop him from doing it. That, I think, is the overriding question, particularly since the president has already said that it's necessary, in his judgment, and I agree with him, for the United States to get on the right side of history with what we saw in Tunisia, what we saw in Egypt, and what we're now seeing in the Persian Gulf itself. Furthermore, and this is where the real question comes in, the president has said it's necessary for Gaddafi to leave, that is, to be deposed.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt whether the United States will pursue that alone, but quite frankly, I think that would be a very good outcome. It would show that the kind of thing Gaddafi's being done is not acceptable in the early 21st century.
Let's go next to Ken. Ken with us from San Francisco.
Yeah, hi. First of all, a couple of points. No-fly has a seemingly innocuous ring to it, like no-fly list. You're just not going to let somebody do something. But in fact, logistically, we're talking about hundreds of jets, fighter jets, that will fly in squadrons, 100 tankers to supply them and refuel them, especially difficult if the operational distance, the base, is far away, which it could be in this case. And inevitably, some of these planes will be shot down. Then what do? We sending in ground forces next to recover the pilots? I mean, this, sure, there's a good moral high horse that we shouldn't allow this guy in power. I agree. However, we allow all kinds of bad things to go on in the world and trade with China that uses its prisoners as organ donors and other bad things, and North Korea, and we're not running in there. So lastly, if we do run in there, isn't it rather silly to go in at this point when Gaddafi is already winning and has his forces stronger than they were before when we could have acted?
Robert Hunter?
So many things. Please be specific about the number of planes.
If you will give Robert Hunter a chance to answer, we will try.
Well, I would have preferred, in fact, said so, that we had done it much earlier, where it would have been a simpler operation, most likely. And I would like to see us use whatever force is necessary now to stop Gaddafi. Now, with regard to a no-fly zone, there's a lot of experience. It was done over Iraq from 1991 onward after the first Persian Gulf War by the United States and Britain and a couple of others from time to time. It was done by all of NATO over Bosnia for 2 years, flew more than 100,000 sorties. People know how to do it. Now, as the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Gates, has said, what you would do is you start by, to use this somewhat innocuous term, suppressing the Libyan air defenses, which is either that you go and you attack them to start with, which you can do from a pretty safe distance with a lot of heavy ordnance that we have, or you can say that if a if an air defense radar lights up, that you would then destroy them. We know how to do that, and it is very likely that this operation, although it would involve, it is true, a lot of aircraft.
And inevitably civilian casualties.
There would inevitably be some civilian casualties in operations against air defense systems or against aircraft flying out of areas in which there are civilians, yes.
All right, Robert Hunter, thank you again, and we apologize for the scramble at the top of the top of the segment. Robert Hunter, former U.S. ambassador to NATO and now a senior advisor at the RAND Corporation, and he joined us, I guess, from his office in Virginia. More on this story as it develops later today on All Things Considered, and stay tuned to NPR News for the latest on that and, of course, the continuing situation in Japan. Tomorrow it's Talk of the Nation Science Friday. We'll see you again on Monday. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.